Hello and welcome to the Wilderness Medic podcast. My name is Daniel and this is part two of our collaboration with the virtual doctors. If you haven't listened to part one, it's worth listening to so that you can hear a bit about the origins of the virtual doctors and how it kind of came into being. In part two, I continue my conversation with Mr. Hugh Jones, the CEO and founder of the Virtual Doctors, and we're going to be focusing more upon the challenges facing Zambia in the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. Welcome to the Wilderness Medic podcast. Check out our website at www.thewildernessmedic.com.
Expedition Resources, Wilderness Medicine, I suppose, our
impact with telemedicine is progressing quite well at the moment, I think, isn't it? We've got a few interesting projects in the pipeline, and then suddenly, obviously, the coronavirus pandemic has come along, and that's going to pose its own challenges in Zambia, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And I suppose it's quite important to point out, I mean, we work very closely with the Ministry of Health. So what we're trying to do is complement the Ministry of Health by supporting them in rural areas. So we work very closely with the district health offices in each district. The Ministry of Health has an e-health strategy, and we fully subscribe to that. With COVID, it's a disease that has challenged the entire world, as we've seen. It has now arrived in Zambia. Yeah. There are roughly around about 40 confirmed cases in Lusaka. Probably more than that. I'm sure it's increased by now. And the rural areas, as we said earlier, are far more challenged. I mean, they don't have the same sort of resources that they do in the bigger cities. You're not really going to find oxygen cylinders, or let alone a ventilator. And so really prevention is key. But even there, they are challenged around their supply chain, and particularly when it comes to water and sanitation and hygiene. And so it really is very important to try to provide them with the guidelines that the Zambian Ministry of Health are pushing out around COVID and preventing COVID-19 spreading.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're in the process of also developing some, not our own guidelines, because as you say, we need to adhere to those ones. But I suppose there's so much information out there online that we're trying to establish our own sort of resource bank and kind of curate and filter out some of the fake news, I suppose.
There is a lot of misinformation floating around that can be, very dangerous. They really need succinct, accurate information, and they need to also, and not just for themselves at the health centres, but also to spread it within the communities. And you get very social and very tight knit communities. Often you'll find the rural health centre. It could be sometimes the centre of the community. It can be a great place but it's a place where people sometimes meet and they'll socialise. Because it's often literally in the centre of the community. And so getting that information coming out from and setting an example, this is how we're dealing with COVID. It's as simple as proper hygiene, washing hands, trying to put a little bit of social distancing or implementing that, which is very difficult when you're used to living in a very gregarious and very highly social environment.
Absolutely, yes. And there's a lot of multi-generational living, I imagine, as well. Was that sort of like that in your experience when you were living in Zambia?
Very much so. I mean, I spent most of my early working life living in Zambia. I lived for a while in a village, in Chisera village. That was in Chief Mwanya's area. That's sort of in the remote rural area of Western Lundazi in the Luanga Valley floor. And I lived in a grass hut, and we used to eat. We used to eat together. The big bowl of Nshima, which is a sort of a maize type porridge, staple diet, and it, we would a huge thing. We'd all eat, put our hands in, and take a little piece of the enshima and dip it in a communal relish pot, beans, pumpkin leaves, chihuahua. And so, in a time of like this where there's coronavirus, COVID-19, highly infectious, that's a good example of how easily it can spread. And people, you know, families all sleep together. I mean, I still do. I mean, my children have never slept on their own, and you have entire communities living and working together, and they're very tight knit as well. And it's very very deeply deep. It runs deep, really. So it's difficult to change people's habits.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose even things that we sort of take for granted over here, like having running water and soap, is potentially quite challenging in some of these villages and at some of the health centres as well.
It is, yes, it is, and it's difficult to get. We really need to try to do our best to help them access the right resources and support the Ministry of Health. I mean, it's really pooling the resources. The Ministry of Health does a very, very good job. They've reacted very robustly to the crisis, and they're doing all the right things. It's just they're very stretched,
absolutely.
And they don't have the ability. So we have the ability to support them. And these rural health centres need soap. They need hand washing stations, even a very simple plastic bucket with a foot pump, and the foot pump controls the faucet for the water, and some bars of soap, as simple as that. And maybe a little bit of detergent or alcohol to disinfect the water. And that would make a huge impact. Something as simple as that and as relatively cheap as that could potentially actually be life-saving.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's hopefully what some of our future campaigns will look at. There's lots in the pipeline. I probably can't say too much officially on this yet because it's lots of exciting discussions and things happening. But yes. And some other things that we sort of had was the sort of, I suppose, the wider use of the app and telemedicine in general, I suppose, thinking back to the UK and other settings.
That's correct, yeah. So it's interesting now that suddenly telemedicine is sort of coming to the forefront because of necessity. I mean, I've seen actually in social media, I think it was today, somebody sent me a social media link of a care assistant working in a nursing home saying, well, doctors aren't allowed to come here anymore. So we're really going to have to up our knowledge. We only have one nurse and she's not well. And so you've got there a sudden need for remote diagnosis and treatment and also disease surveillance as well. And now we have the technology available. We've got the experience of implementing a very sophisticated, but very easy to use system in Zambia. It works very well in Zambia. We've got that experience. And I think the system we've developed, because it's very easy to use, it's not very complicated. There's not a lot of processes around it. It's simple. Here's some data. This is what's the vitals of the patient: age, gender, and the vitals, symptoms, examination findings, medications perhaps that have been administered, and then a photograph if necessary. It's as simple as that. And we've had some interest from a local GP network in Sussex who would like to trial it at a nursing home. So give a app on the smartphone to a nurse in the nursing home, and then the nurse at the GP surgery will have the doctor's portal version, and the cases can go to the triage nurse. So she will either be able to answer them directly herself, or then maybe if she cannot, then she will triage them to one of the 10 GPs in the network. And then we've also had some interest. You know, there was, I suppose, the army now are supporting the NHS. And there may be potential there. So we would love to do something in the UK. We'd be more than happy to do it. And we're ready to step up and serve the country.
Absolutely. And I suppose just going back to what you're saying about sort of the care home side of things, I think it's got a huge potential there. So I work as a GP sort of anyway, and quite often you will, through no fault of anyone, but you get a bit of Chinese whispers almost. So the nurse will ring up and say XYZ is wrong, and then a receptionist will take a message, and then something maybe goes through to another doctor, and then it eventually comes to you. But I think to get a lot of these things, and also quite importantly to have a bit of a pro forma and a structure, could be really helpful and just help with efficiency in primary care as well. I think it's really exciting, and there's a lot of potential that we've got.
Absolutely, I think, I've heard of the use of WhatsApp, and that's sort of cropped up sometimes. You know, people say, well, why don't you use Skype or WhatsApp or FaceTime? Well, firstly, it's security; they're not secure. But also, like you say, this is far. You can retain that case, you can go back to the case and reopen it, and everything is structured. You know, you have the age of the patient, gender, blood pressure, temperature, pulse, oxygen saturation, all the key. Basically, the minimum a doctor would need to know, the standard, and it's all in there, structured, and it's very easy to fill in the data. We have a drop-down box for the specialities, and as I say, less than 5 minutes, they can fill in the case. It's not very time-consuming.
Yeah, and I think one of the good things, because a lot of people have sort of said to me when I've been explaining about the virtual doctors, is they sort of automatically assume that we probably are consulting in real time, using video and that sort of thing, and it's quite interesting when you say, "Oh no, it's essentially a bit like sending emails, or as you say, a bit like WhatsApp." But I think that's one of the good things about it, actually. I mean, in terms of sort of data bandwidth, and also the way in which a discussion can evolve. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I think if we go back to the development of the service for Zambia, I think real time. Well, firstly, it would have been very challenging because of the ban. Even with the mobile phone network in place, the internet doesn't really have the capacity to support very reliable real time video conferencing, for example. But also, if you think about it, it's the time clinicians. For a clinician in Zambia and a clinician, a doctor in the UK, to be able to synchronize together a time to be able to talk about a patient case in real time. And if there are issues with the network, I mean, you know how it is if you talk on Skype or Zoom, or often even teleconferencing in perfect internet, people sometimes can't hear.
Increasingly aware of what it's like to do
this
that.
It's very challenging. So this actually gives, and also it's good to have a bit of time to be able to think the case through, even though it may take a few minutes. Having that time to sit down and think, okay, so I'm going to put the data in. There's no pressure to answer. So you've got somebody waiting there, and you feel the pressure. You can fill it in their own time. Yeah. And some of the clinical officers do actually retain it and maybe note down if they are back-to-back patients. They can go and fill in the case later. And the same with the responding doctor. And I think that's the appeal for the doctors in the UK, is it's sort of armchair volunteering. They can be maybe a busy hospital doctor, but they may go for a cup of coffee or a lunch break, and they can answer a case. Or they can do it in the evening. There's no pressure on them, and I think you need that ability. You need that. It needs to be sort of slow pace like that for a more, I think, accurate response.
Yeah, I can completely agree with you. I think that's probably part of what attracted me in the first place, is the fact that you can sort of do something sustainable and sort of contribute. But alongside your job, because I think sometimes there's a risk of going out somewhere and volunteering, which is obviously a good thing in some places, but then sometimes you're left questioning, and this is a bit cynical, but you're left thinking, am I helping the community, or am I actually helping myself in terms of the skills that I'm trying to develop? And I think this gives it quite a nice way of being able to do something sustainable.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, it is. And actually, some of the volunteer doctors have spent time, perhaps they had their elective, maybe even in Zambia itself or Malawi or the region, or have completed their diploma in tropical health medicine, and want to keep in touch. I think one of our board members spent a year in Zimbabwe working in a hospital. And also it's building up the relationship, because we have outside of the, so we have the core telemedicine service, but we try to sort of encourage solidarity between the doctors in the UK and the clinical officers in Zambia through the, we have the virtual education hub, trying to give them access to resources, and then there's the forum as well, which is sort of like an open discussion, isn't it, really? And yeah. I think it creates a little bit of solidarity, so that people can introduce themselves and have open discussions.
Yeah, I think I'd agree that. I think that's really important, getting that sort of sense of community, and that's something that we're going to try and particularly work on during the current pandemic. And we certainly, myself, along with some of the rest of the medical team, we're putting some resources up, which I think will be really, really valuable. And as you say, I think it's important, like we were saying before, that it's sort of led by their needs rather than what we think is helpful.
Absolutely, yes, very much. And and ideas, we share ideas, and it just shows that with this pandemic, it's a global challenge. We're all in this together, and we all need to work together and share ideas. And if we could implement the virtual doctors system in the UK, how wonderful that would be, that a system that's been designed by clinical officers in Zambia is implemented in the UK to serve the UK. I think that just brings it home, really, doesn't it?
Brings it full circle. Yeah, I think so. And I think that's it's a great note to sort of draw this podcast to a close. And it's been great having a chat. And we'll post this up on our own sort of virtual doctors podcast platform, so that anyone who's interested can listen. And we'll also send us. It means the clinical officers can get a bit of an idea of what's going on. Some of them may not be aware of the charity's origins and things. And I'll also share it on my own podcast, which is the Wilderness Medic podcast, and just to raise awareness. So thank you very much, Hugh.
Thank you, Daniel. It's been an absolute pleasure. Really has. Nice. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care now.
All right. Take care.
Enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay up to date with what we're doing at the Virtual Doctors, you can keep in touch with us on Facebook, so just search for the Virtual Doctors, or we're also on Twitter, again at Virtual Doctors, or you can visit the website, which is virtualdoctors.org. As we sort of alluded to in the podcast, we are about to launch our fundraising specific to COVID-19, and this is mainly going to be focusing on WASH, so water and sanitation and hygiene. And that is focusing on making sure the rural health centres that we support have appropriate wash stations, soap, and really focusing on that side of things. And then at the same time, we shall be developing a set of online resources, which you can find at vdoctorforums. To V and then drforums.org.uk. And if you know of any resources that might help our clinical officers, so particularly relevant for low resource settings, then it'd be great if you could get in touch with me via the Wilderness Medic Facebook page or Instagram. And lastly, if you are in a position where you would be able to donate towards this, it'd be great if you went to the Virtual Doctors website and gave what you could. If you've enjoyed listening to our podcast, then check out our website, www.thewildernessmedic.com. If you're interested in being a guest on a future episode or writing a blog for us, then do get in touch, and don't forget to follow us on social media. Until next time, take care.